This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Okay, so I'm going to give Laura a call.
Hello.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, are you okay?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being a part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month.
Anything to help.
Do you want to take us back to when you first started having symptoms?
Yeah, so it was in 2021. I was pregnant at the time. I was having really bad sickness. I was really sensitive to bright light. I was just very tired all the time. But obviously they were normal pregnancy symptoms, and that's what they kept getting pushed off at. That old wives' tale is if you're having a girl, you are a bit more sick. And we found out we were having a girl quite early on. And it was only when I woke up one morning, I think I was around 20 weeks pregnant, and I noticed that my toes were numb. I was stumbling when I was walking, so I thought, definitely not normal. And it just, over the days, it just spread up my foot, up my leg, up my toes. So that's when I thought, oh, this is definitely not normal. So I went to the GP and he sent me for an MRI scan of my back because he thought maybe it was the baby lying on a nerve.
Yeah, I was thinking they probably thought, yeah, that on a nerve.
Yes, and again, they just kept passing it off and got told I got anxiety a lot, and it was just me being nervous to be a new mom. People just kept dismissing it.
How many times did you go before you went for your MRI?
For my back MRI, about 3 times. But then I saw about 4 doctors before my brain scan, and they all told me I was too young for it to be anything serious. One doctor even told me I'd know about it if it was a brain tumour because I hadn't had any seizures or anything. So I had to really push and push to get the brain scan. Yeah, they just kept telling me. Because I had no seizures, there was nothing like that. I had no memory problems. Yeah. And it was just getting passed off. And all of these appointments I had to go to alone because it was COVID at the time. It was really high. So my husband, Danny, was waiting in the car, just waiting for me for all these appointments.
It must have felt really surreal because when it is that whole COVID time and where people weren't allowed to do it, it just felt like we were in some kind of like apocalyptic madness.
Oh, definitely.
So it's such
it didn't feel real. Yeah.
So to have that as well on top, it just feels When I went to appointments during the COVID time, it was just weird. It just, everything felt odd.
So, and then even one doctor told me, I had to tell one doctor I thought it was a neurological problem. So I really pushed for that brain scan. And when I finally got referred for a brain scan, the consultant, I think he only scanned me because there was nothing else to do. They just couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. So when I finally got referred to the neurological hospital, the consultant there, he didn't even want to scan my brain. It was only because I asked for it because I was getting a bit paranoid now that when you're pregnant, you can't lie on your back for too long. Mm. So I just knew I needed a brain scan. So I really pushed for it. So when they finally scanned me, I was only in the MRI machine for about 5 minutes. And then I got pulled out and they said they could see a big mass on the left side of my brain and I needed to go back in. So I was put back in the MRI machine and I was in there for an hour in the end. And in the MRI machine, there's a little mirror that you can see like into the radiotography room. So I just watched through this mirror, the doctors, surgeons, consultants, it's all staring at my brain scan. So then I started to really panic then because I didn't know what was going on. And I was conscious I'd been in there for an hour. And I just remember talking to Sienna in my head.
Yeah.
That's the only way I could get through it. And I was just saying, oh, it's going to be okay, Sienna, because we'd already named her at this point. We already knew she was a girl.
Did that in some way, yeah. Like you were together, like she was with you, and you, when you're talking, you were talking yeah, to her, and she could hear you, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. And even now when I have MRI scans, like I get through them by talking to Sienna in my head.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, it was comforting that she was there, but I wasn't there for an hour.
That's a long time. I think I only once had it where it was for an hour, and then they have to change the diet. Did they give you the diet when you're pregnant? When they check?
No, I couldn't have it.
That's what, yeah, I wondered.
I couldn't have the contrast dye, so they just could see like a big mass. They couldn't tell me if it was like cancer or anything or what kind of tumour it was. They just saw a big mass. So I was with, luckily I was with my mum on this appointment.
Oh, good.
My husband Danny, he was in work. So after the scan, he just said, we just need you to stay around for about half an hour. We found something. And even then they were like, don't worry about it though. It's probably nothing serious. It might just be swelling on the brain. People have swelling on the brain. It's completely normal. So again, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know how this is going to go. My mum was trying to comfort me. I was trying to comfort my mum. And then I got pulled into a room. And he was like, I'm so sorry, the brain tumour, it's a pretty big mass on your brain. And he said, if it's what it looks like, you'd probably only have about a year to live.
So they immediately did they send it off for a biopsy first? Or did they just make a decision and tell you, we think
it? They said, it looks like a glioma, looks like it's been there for a good few years. And he said, if like worst case scenario is you're only going to have a year to live.
How to process that?
29 at the time.
Yeah, it's impossible to process that.
It was just, and after being like reassured by so many people it wasn't nothing to get that diagnosis, and I knew there was something wrong and Annie knew there was something wrong, so it was a weird relief in a way that I hadn't been making it up. And I wasn't, like, I felt like I was wasting NHS time. And so it was a relief when they said, like, when they knew what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
I wasn't making up.
Yeah. I was 25 really when I got diagnosed. And I just know at that age, it's a shock to everybody. But you just think, hey, how and why? Why would this happen to me?
Exactly.
You think it'd be older, or you just think, this doesn't make sense. It's so hard to process. It's difficult.
It's like, really difficult. Yeah, why? It's heartbreaking thinking that I wasn't going to. Being told that while I was pregnant was just absolutely heartbreaking. Yeah. So then I had to then go home to Danny, my husband, and then I had to tell him, and he was like, it was just a nightmare. It was just a nightmare. We've not woken up from
ever since, yeah. So yeah. When was their next, what was their plan then to do? You are pregnant, so what was the next plan? Yeah.
So it was just like a watch and wait situation. The plan was originally to get to 34 weeks pregnant, but then like my surgeon was like, I can't just send you away and not keep an eye on you. So I had to go back like every other week to the neurological hospital, and they were just like checking me over. But then I started to become a lot more poorly. The numbness just spread up my leg, and about 25 weeks pregnant I just could not walk unaided. Like I was on crutches, I was in a wheelchair, and then my arms started going numb and funny. So they were like, it's clearly spreading, it's clearly growing, we need to step in now and do something, or it's not just, you know, Sienna's life in the balance, it's your life in the balance. Me and Danny had a lot of heartbreaking decisions to make. And
did you have the same Zen? It's, oh, do you know what? I'm so rubbish at names Sienna. Now. Zen.
Oh. It's Sienna.
Sienna. Okay. And do you know what? I find it really hard to, if I don't know a word naturally that you speak every day, I can't get the word out quite yet. Like I'm like, bleh.
I know, it's tragic. We're the same.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, it's not just me. Sienna.
No, definitely not. Don't worry.
I think, if I say Sienna, I think of Hollyoaks, because there's the girl in Hollyoaks. That's probably only time I've ever heard that name. It's a really pretty name. Did you have Sienna before then they'd started treatment?
Yes, it just got to the point where I was so poorly.
Yeah.
They just had to intervene. So at 30 weeks pregnant, I had a planned cesarean, which had to be put asleep for because they couldn't risk any pressure going to my brain.
Yeah.
And she only weighed 3.4 pounds when she was born. So she was tiny. So she had to go straight into the neonatal unit.
Do you know, I was 4 pounds and 8 ounces when I was a baby because I was 2 months early.
Oh, wow.
And it's madness.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, but it's madness because I'm like 5'11" now. I'm huge. And you would never know that I was
very tall. I'm like 5'2".
Oh, are you? Oh, but it just shows that even though you're premature, you still can grow.
Oh yeah. She's really tall now, actually. She's fine now, so that's lovely. Be a relief for us.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
So yeah. So after I gave birth, Sienna became really poorly then. Oh. So on the second day of her life, her lung collapsed. So she had to be transferred to a higher care unit, which was about an hour away from us. So me and Danny discharged ourselves from where I gave birth from, and then we went to another hospital about an hour away, and we just stayed there for a few days. But again, that was hard because I was still really poorly. Yeah. I was like declining neurologically. Like I was still on crutches. Like I couldn't use my right arm anymore. And then I had to have brain surgery literally the week after. So then we had to come back, but Danny stayed with Sienna in the higher care unit till she came back to our local hospital. Mm. So then my mum came with me to the for my brain surgery. So when I was getting my pre-op, I could finally have the MRI with the contrast dye in it.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't have, obviously, originally. So they could see now what it was and how big it was. And unfortunately, in the 10 weeks that all of this had happened in, my tumour had doubled in size. My surgeon thought he could have probably got out 80% of it in those 10 weeks prior, but no, he said it doubled. It was now intertwined into my motor cortex, and he could only probably get 20% out. So then 10 days later, just before Christmas, the results came back, confirming it was obviously glioblastoma, and the prognosis was it would probably be about a year to live, even less if I didn't expect treatment. It was really difficult to process. I think we knew because of how quickly I declined, but to be told at 29, it's just nothing can compare you for that, prepare you for that at all. And at this point, Sienna was still in the neonatal unit, so it all happened around Christmas time. So me and Danny spent Sienna's first Christmas in the neonatal unit thinking this was going to be my last one. And it was difficult. It was hard. It was such a hard time. Sienna, she's amazing. Now you wouldn't even look at her and think there was anything wrong with her. She's healthy weight, healthy height. She does amazing. She goes to nursery.
That's what it's I mean. It's like your baby can go
little
through
happy things.
Yeah, but a baby can is quite a fighter when they're young. That's what I meant with myself. Is like my mum, I had some infection as well that they were worried about, and so I was in the hospital for a long time, and it was touch and go sometimes. But it's just to show that actually, medical science is amazing. She's an example, isn't she?
Exactly. She had to spend 51 days in a neonatal unit.
Yeah.
She's a fighter, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah.
In January 2022, I started the 6 weeks of radiotherapy and 6 months of chemotherapy. And this worked. In September 22, after my MRI scan, we were told that my tumour was stable and it was no longer active. So I had a few months off treatment and we felt like things were getting back to normal. But then, unfortunately, in January 23, after another routine scan, my tumour showed signs of new activity and I needed to go back on chemotherapy treatment. So then we had to start the whole process again. Mm. I was only on chemo for one cycle and I ended up having a seizure and I had an emergency MRI. And we were told again that chemo wasn't working and we had to try a new chemo. Yeah, so it felt like we were back at stage one again.
Yeah.
And they were quite negative about it. They were like, this might not work. You might want to think about getting your affairs in order, which again is just heartbreaking to hear. And obviously when you've got a little girl and everything was seemingly going okay. But I had a few good scans on the new chemo I was on. I've been on that for 12 months now. But again, unfortunately, at Christmas time, we were told, me and Danny, that it was no longer working. And my tumour had spread across my brain, and I didn't have many options left at this point now. I've just had radiotherapy again for 2 weeks, which has been difficult having it again.
Yeah,
they were just waiting on an MRI scan, actually, which is next week, and results.
Yeah. Are you able to still do some things while you are okay? I'm sure you're incredibly tired,
yeah.
And I'm sure your days go up and down. You have a different day. Some days are good, some days are bad. But do you try and use those good days to do things?
Definitely. We have a very positive mindset. Yeah. In everything we do for Sienna, we raise awareness just in hope that no other families have to go through what we go through, and hopefully one day there is a cure and there is more funding. So everything we do,
that's so selfless of you.
Sienna. Yeah. So we make our TikTok videos, we've got our Instagram page, and we just post our journey on there just to show people, you know, how hard it is. And I think people need to see the reality of brain tumours and cancer. And that's why we share our story to social media. That's why we do interviews. And that's why we just...
What's your name on there so I can put it on here?
Yeah, so it's Laura Down the Rabbit Hole on Instagram.
Laura Down the
And then it was Laura Down the Rabbit Hole. Laura Down the Rabbit Hole _ on TikTok.
Everyone's only seeing you the way you are now. But tell us about you before you had to go through all of these treatments.
I was just a normal girl. I went to work. I work in a beauty salon. So I was very girly. I liked going on holiday. Me and Danny did a lot of traveling. We've been together for 10 years, me and Danny.
Wow.
My best friend, my husband.
10 years?
So
you met at school?
10 years, yeah. Just after school, yeah. Early 20s, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. He's been there for everything for me, and forever grateful for everything he does. He takes me to every appointment. He drives me everywhere. And he's a good advocate for me as well. Like, I push and push sometimes, but he pushes even harder when it comes to doctors and stuff, because he knows how I was treated. So yeah, he's great.
Have you been doing any counselling?
I did at the start. I am a hospital. I spoke to someone, but no, not anymore. No, I think I'm in an okay headspace at the moment. I'm always offered it when I go to my hospital, but at the moment I don't have any therapy or anything.
You're just taking every day as it comes, and when you can is noise and try and raise some awareness.
Yeah, and with my Instagram page, I get a lot of people messaging me saying they're going through the same stuff, and that kind of brings me comfort as well, like that I can help people and reach out to people, and that people feel like they can message me and be like, I'm going through what you're going through, and then people say to me like, I couldn't talk about it. But I think in a way I'm lucky that I'm okay talking about it. Like, it doesn't upset me anymore to talk about it. Like, it really upset me at a point. I just ignored I had cancer or a brain tumor for so many weeks. When I was first diagnosed, I was just in bed, just depressed. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to acknowledge it. But now it took a few months to get to that point, but now I can talk about it openly. And I think that's a blessing as well, because like people message me and say, I can't talk about it, or my mum can't talk about it, but I've seen your story, it's bringing me hope. So that makes me feel good about myself as well.
Yeah.
And that's what gets me through the day as well.
What would you say to someone else that if they were put in the situation that you're in, what would you say?
Just don't give up hope. Just keep going. It might be, no one can tell you how long you've got left on this world for you to decide. People say to me, like, you might not be here next Christmas, or you might not be here for this, you might not be here for that. But you could say that about anybody, just not just me in my situation. Anyone could say that. You just keep going, just keep positive. And again, just tell people you love them every day and just make as many memories as you can. And
just live
your life.
Yeah, I say to people all the time, if you love someone, tell them, because what you don't want to do is not tell them.
Definitely.
You won't get a chance to say it one day. Like all of us, anything could happen any day.
Exactly.
So I'm a very, if you love someone, tell them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also find like setting milestones in my head helped me as well a little bit. Like when my doctor or has said, well, this is prognosis now, I always think I'm going to book something for after that. So I've got something to aim for. So that's how I get through things.
Well, you've already gone past the thing that they gave you.
Exactly.
You've already done that. You can say,
yeah. You already told me.
Yeah, you should go up to the person that said it and go, hi, I'm still here. Thanks very much.
Exactly. I saw Sienna turn one, which was my big milestone. And then she's just turned two. That was my next one. And then getting me to maybe statistically this won't happen, but I would really love to see her, school. And like that's my next milestone.
Yeah. And I think it does help. Like,
yeah, and I always do that to people, just
hold on
just
to something.
Get something in your head that you're going to make it to.
Yeah,
definitely.
No, it's true. I think if you don't have something in your head that I want to get to somewhere, then it's almost like you've given up on things. Whereas if you do constantly have something, but really believe in it, like I'm going to be there and watch her on her on that day, I'm going to see her go to school, play school, or whichever it is first. But yeah, make those in your head and believe it. What are the kind of things that you've been doing with the charity?
We've done speeches with them. We've gone to do talks about the brain tumor research. We've done TV interviews. We just try and raise as much awareness as possible. We find social media is a really good way for us to raise awareness. Our TikToks do really well. And then it educates other people as well, because we get comments like, oh, I've never heard of that. And I didn't know, people didn't know that brain tumours were so underfunded and that they only get 1% of the national spend. So we educating on people like that. And it's just putting brain tumours out there and brain cancer out there. And people don't understand if they've obviously not been through it. So we just to educate people and say, look, this is how bad it is. It kills more adults, women and children than 40, and it only gets 1% of the funding, which is not good enough, really. It's not good enough for me. It's not good enough for the 16,000 people diagnosed every year. It needs to change. We just want Sienna to look back one day and be like, oh yeah, my mum and dad, they did everything they could to raise awareness, and I'm proud of them.
Yeah,
that's all we want.
Have you got a charity page that you're using? Is there one you're doing that people can donate and things so that it goes towards brain tumor research?
Yeah, it's on my the link is on my Instagram page. For that, I can't think of what the name is off the top of my head, sorry.
No, that's fine. I'll find that.
But there is a link.
No, I will find that and I'll make sure it's on here on the page, wherever we're on, whichever podcast we're on. I'll make sure that it's on there. And what made you go with brain tumour research? What drew you towards that charity?
They've just given our family a lot of support and a lot of help. And I've met a few people who were going through my situation as well, thanks to them. And again, it's nice to connect to people as well who are going through similar things. It is an invisible illness and it is hard explaining to people.
Yeah. But what you're doing here is exactly how the way of doing it is. It's all we can do is to speak up, speak out and let people know in as the best way we can. It's all we can do. But at least you've done it and we've done that and we've done all we can.
Yeah.
And you can never say, I didn't try. It's you've tried everything and you've done everything. And
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Is there anyone you want to say thank you to?
So many people, so many charities that have helped me and Danny and Sienna and my family. Obviously, the brain tumor research have helped us so much. They're the ones who got our story out there originally. And obviously, Danny, just for putting up with me and just being my rock for the past 2.5 years and 10 years really. And then my mum and dad, my in-laws, They help us so much. They've come over to our house in the middle of the night when I've been poorly, when Danny's had to take me to hospital, and they just come within a heartbeat. And it's just, we're a very close family. And we call ourselves
Team Sienna.
And Team Sienna, yeah, that's what our group chat calls. And we're just a very close family, and it's very nice. And then just strangers online who just reach out to me, and I love replying to messages. I love it when people take the time out of the day just to send me a message saying, I hope you're okay, or I've been thinking of you, or I've prayed for you. That just honestly just means the world to me and to my family. We get messages from people all over the world. I've had messages from like Australia, New Zealand, America. We were in an article in the New York, in New York a few weeks ago, and just so many people reached out, and it's just incredible, like, that our little family is just, people are just invested in the care, and it's just incredible the support we've got.
I'm so grateful that you took the time, and it is a really emotional time for you and what you're going through, but it's really amazing that you're still wanting to raise awareness. Thank you from everybody who you're doing that for. Thank you so much.
No worries.
This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.